Hello, friends. I'm Larry Kirk, and this is The Music and the Dance. And we're getting off to an interesting start for the beginning of a new year, the year 2022. I had hoped to be doing this podcast a little earlier in the week, but I was delayed because of some technical problems, some sickness, and other issues. So as I said in the introduction to my last podcast, it's been a particularly busy time, and there have been a lot of challenges. The beginning of January is a time where, going all the way back to the 1970s, Christians begin to recognize the issue of the sanctity of human life, specifically in January, because of the Roe versus Wade ruling of the Supreme Court in 1973. So I wanted to bring a guest on today. She and I are going to discuss some of her perspectives and experiences from working with a crisis pregnancy center, or as she clarifies in the discussion, what she prefers to simply call a pregnancy center. And then after that, I want to look at a particular psalm, Psalm 139, which I think is just a beautiful psalm that speaks to the issue of the sanctity of human life. So here we go. I'll introduce my friend, Kayla, and we'll discuss this issue together. Hey, friends. I'm talking with a friend of mine, Kayla Mowry, and I had the pleasure, the honor, the responsibility to marry Kayla and her husband, Nathan, some years ago. How many years ago was that, Kayla?
Almost eight. It'll be 8 in March.
Wow. Time flies, right? Well, they're members of Christ Community Church. I'm grateful that Kayla was willing and able to join me today. If the audio sounds a little bit different than when we sometimes record, it's because I'm recording Kayla's side of the conversation remotely through my PodTrack P4 and my iPhone. I had hoped that we would do this earlier in the month, January, due to sickness. It was postponed. And I was trying to kind of get it timed to be close to the Sanctity of Human Life Sunday, which was this year, the 16th. It's always the third Sunday of January. And it was set in motion back in 1984. President Ronald Reagan issued a proclamation designating January 22nd as the first National Sanctity of Human Life Day. That's the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. The original Supreme Court decision was in 1973. January 22nd was the day of that decision. So it actually works out, that's a super long explanation to say that it works out that we're actually closer to the actual day than the third Sunday of the month, which would have been the 16th. So anyway, here we are doing it. I wanted to do a podcast on the issue of the sanctity of human life. I want to look at some scripture later on. But before I do that, I want to bring Kayla into the conversation. And I invited her in part because of her background. Kayla, thank you for taking time to talk with us. And I wanted to just kind of start out by asking you to tell me a little bit about how you got involved with Sanctity of Human Life issues, and especially with the organization Resources for Women here in our community. What do they do? How did you get connected with them?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I actually got involved with crisis pregnancy ministry in college. So I went to Florida State University, and there was a crisis pregnancy center on campus. The campus is pretty condensed, but near the outskirts, there's some land that's owned by this crisis pregnancy center that's completely surrounded by the campus. So it's not owned by Florida State, but it's on campus. People have to walk through the parking lot to get to class. So I would walk through that parking lot to get to class, and I got curious about what they did there. And I got to speaking with the director at the time, mm-hmm. and was really interested in being a part. So I would work at the crisis pregnancy center folding baby clothes and praying with women who had already chosen to carry their babies to term.
Okay.
But just to be in there and be around it. I wasn't counseling anybody at that time.
Right.
I was around the ministry, and I just felt I got a feel for how special that kind of ministry is and how it happened right under our noses.
Right.
So I did that in college for a little while, and then I moved to Daytona after college, where I grew up. And my former roommate was a social worker, and she was working at Resources for Women at the time. And I learned that there was a ministry just like the one I had worked at in college right here where I grew up, and I never knew it. I got really interested in Resources for Women, and then they had a need at the time for an executive director, and I was able to fill that position and work alongside one of my best friends doing crisis pregnancy ministry.
I feel like we could do a whole episode on, like, Providence out of this
story. Oh, my goodness, yeah.
You know, how cool
is it? She and I met in college, but we grew up 5 minutes away from each other. Didn't know it. Right.
Yeah. And then that the whole idea, like, I never realized that story about the crisis pregnancy center right in the middle of the campus and you know, just walking across. That's so cool. What do you – I know that there are a lot of different avenues from which people come at this larger, this sort of big umbrella issue of the sanctity of human life, you know. But these crisis pregnancy centers, which – if I'm reading you right, Resources for Women is just the name of an organization, but they kind of have the same philosophy. Like, what are they about? What is it? What's so important about what they do in particular with regard to this issue?
Sure. So crisis pregnancy centers popped up in the 70s after the Roe v. Wade decision in response to legalized abortions. And crisis pregnancy centers vary, just like churches vary from denomination to denomination, even within denominations, they vary in their ministry philosophy. So I wouldn't want to blanket statement that they're all the same. Some do ministry in a way that I'm really proud of, and some do it in ways that I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
With that being said, in general, the idea of Resources for Women and other pregnancy centers or crisis pregnancy centers like it, a lot of times we call ourselves pregnancy centers because crisis pregnancy centers can kind of have a a certain sound to it that's linked to centers that might do things the way that we wouldn't want to do them. But Resources for Women and other pregnancy centers like it approach unplanned pregnancies in a way that is really important to our communities because they're providing for physical needs for things like pregnancy tests, for supplies, for ultrasounds, but in doing so, they're also able to offer support and spiritual support, emotional support, counseling. So that's kind of the way we go about that ministry.
No, that's super helpful. And I guess I'm, you know, my questions aren't necessarily linear. It's just things that come to mind as I'm listening to you. I would imagine you've had a lot of conversations with women who are struggling with or trying to make tough decisions related to unplanned pregnancies. And I guess one of the questions, I think I sent you some questions before just to kind of, you know, be a catalyst for our discussion. But I wonder if, you know, what would be some of the things that a woman in a challenging pregnancy, an unplanned pregnancy, or even a planned pregnancy where there's like second, you know, they're second guessing that plan, what would they really wish that people who are maybe coming out of a strongly pro-life, you know, Christian conviction posture would understand about their situation?
So 1 in 3 women in the United States, 1 in 3 people will experience an unplanned pregnancy and choose abortion. And that includes the church. The statistics are very similar within the church and people that are not in the church. So a lot of times we look at it as a Christian versus secular problem.
Right, right.
That this is going on in the world and not going on in our churches.
Let me
think that
let me interrupt for just a second and ask you.
Yeah.
Did I hear you right? You said one in three people will experience will have an abortion.
Yes.
I did not know that. Go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So whenever I'm speaking to people at a church, I'm seeing that one in three in the crowd are abortion survivors. And looking at when I started looking at it that way, it really softened my heart toward what was going on. This isn't a small part of our community, and it's definitely not the other. It's us in the church and
right.
people not in the church. So I think that people who are going through an unplanned pregnancy and struggling with their decision whether or not to carry the term would like to be humanized and would like people to know that nobody wants an abortion. That's something that a client said to me one time as I was asking her questions about her situation. And, I think I accidentally said what I shouldn't have said and said, well, what makes you want to have an abortion? And she said, nobody wants to have an abortion.
Okay.
You don't want to have an abortion.
Right.
And so that is something that I think women in that situation would like people to know, that they feel like they're pressed up against the wall and there's no other choice. It's almost like an animal caught in a trap that's going to chew its own leg off to get out. And when you look at it that way, you have pity on the animal that's trying to chew its own leg off
right.
to get out versus total disgust or
right.
anger.
Yeah.
Yes. And you see that woman as a precious life in need of salvation equal to that of her child, who is a precious life in need of salvation.
Right.
And viewing it that way helps you actually to be more effective in your ministry of saving babies. When you are actually interested and actually very concerned about the well-being, the emotional state, and the life of the woman who's carrying the baby.
Yeah. Have you ever... go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I wondered, you know, we live in a culture, though, where often feelings of empathy overwhelm convictions, and convictions get compromised, and even our understanding of what's right and wrong and true and false gets almost subordinated to feelings of sympathy. So were you ever tempted in this journey because of the... what you just said, the hard choices that women are facing, how do you sustain that love for the woman, but also that commitment to life?
Right. My experience working at Resources for Women really solidified my viewpoint that abortion is never the kind or compassionate response
right.
to a woman facing unplanned pregnancy. Abortion, as believers, we believe that we're the imago Dei made in the image of God, and that God's the author of our life, and he's also
right.
the finisher of our life. And we trust that and believe that, and we trust it even when we don't always understand.
Right.
So there is a point of faith here where we're drawing a line in the sand and saying, this is true because God says it's true.
Yeah.
But God has been so gracious as to give me a view at Resources for Women into why that's true.
Yeah.
So there's women who are facing unplanned pregnancy because of an awful situation through rape or incest. That's usually the two reasons people give, and that's less than 1% of all unplanned pregnancies
right.
are a result of rape or incest, so it's really small. But even in those situations, I've seen women have their babies and experience such freedom from what happened to them,
right.
And redemption through having their babies. I've also sat down with women who struggled with the decision of whether or not to carry to term, decided to abort their pregnancies, and come back and lament about it and be so sad and so broken and so guilty about what they did on top of the trauma of whatever caused the pregnancy.
Right.
And that's why I say that abortion is never the kind or compassionate thing for an unplanned pregnancy. It just results in additional trauma to be added to what they've already experienced.
Right. Yeah, I was just curious about that in light of just kind of hearing in your voice and knowing you that level of, because I think sometimes the world thinks that if you take a pro-life stance, you are lacking in compassion towards women, and it's just not the case.
Right.
From the kind of subjective side of it, from the perspective of women whom you've seen struggle with the challenges of an unwanted pregnancy, which I can only, you know, I can imagine the scenarios. You mentioned rape and incest, but even apart from that, think of, you know, you're talking about a pregnancy center on a college campus. Think of a 19-year-old just getting pregnant and thinking this is going to ruin her life, you know, the socioeconomic impact, the reaction of her family, her church, her boyfriend, or whoever it was. You know, there's just so many reasons that you can understand the pull towards maybe this would be an answer. What are the reasons that actually cause a woman in a situation that's really challenging to decide, you know what, I'm going to go through with this. I'm going to either keep my baby or bring this baby to term and put this baby boy or girl up for adoption. What types of things have that impact?
Yeah, so my favorite aspect of the pregnancy center ministry is the options counseling that we would do during a pregnancy test consultation visit. And when I first started, I thought options counseling meant that we share with a woman her three options: to carry to term and parent, carry to term, make an adoption plan, or to terminate her pregnancy. And we explain those options in a way that's so compelling, and we bring the truth that's so self-evident, and a woman or the boyfriend, they would have no choice but to choose to carry to term. They just couldn't deny the truth. And then that's just not the case. That's not how our brains work when we're under stress.
Yeah.
So the way that we go about it is to talk as little as possible, to bring a woman into our center and make sure she knows that she's safe, that this is totally confidential, and to ask her story. And so many times clients would tell me that this was the first time anybody has really asked them, what happened? How are you feeling? What do you want? Because instantly, when you tell somebody that I'm pregnant and you're not supposed to be pregnant, they're going to ask you, well, what are you going to do? Followed with, you have to do X, Y, Z. You can't do X, Y, Z. So we just ask them what happened.
Yeah.
And what are you thinking? What are the people, what are your parents thinking? What's your boyfriend thinking? And they will share their story with us. And then we will give them really straightforward, factual, medically reviewed information about termination, give them information about all of the parenting resources available to them in our area, which there are so many, and then all the resources available to them should they choose to make an adoption plan at the end. But really what makes somebody decide that they're going to carry to term is themselves. They'll give you the laundry list of reasons why they can't carry to term and they cannot parent, and usually it has to do with money and status. And then they'll give the reasons why they can't make an adoption plan, because that would be emotionally traumatizing for them, is how they usually feel. And then it comes to abortion. And there's not really a bunch of reasons they give to why they want to have an abortion. It's just to avoid all the pain of those other two options.
Right.
And then something I like to ask is, what is the worst thing that would happen if you carried to term and parented? Because that sounds like if you were going to carry to term, you would choose to parent, for example, instead of make an adoption plan. And usually the worst case scenario is that, well, it would be really hard. I might have to drop out of school. I might have to move back home.
Right.
I might not have enough money and have to rely on some of those resources that you just told me about. And that's valid. And those are probably true things. And then, so I said, okay, I hear you. That's difficult. What's the worst case scenario? What's the worst thing that would happen if you had an abortion? What's the worst thing that could happen? He said that I would hate myself, that I would feel that guilt forever, that I would think about what color my baby's eyes were for the rest of my life.
Oh, my.
And then I asked, well, let's weigh these two worst-case scenarios.
Yeah.
And which one can you live with? Because you don't have to answer to me.
Right.
And you don't have to answer your parents, but you will have to answer to yourself. And that conversation, followed by a wonderful ultrasound that usually shows a dancing baby at 7 weeks, little and very undefined, but still lots of movement.
Yeah.
Is what softens the heart. And there's no emotional manipulation there. There's validation of feelings, and there's factual information, but there's no judgment or fear-mongering or manipulation. It's just the truth speaking it for itself and the woman's own heart speaking to her. And a lot of times, women choose to have an abortion without telling anybody because there's so much fear and so much shame. So they'll call an abortion hotline, get an appointment, and go get it taken care of before they're even able to tell anyone, if there was anybody who would listen and not just tell them what to do. So sometimes just taking an hour to have a conversation can be life-saving, to not make a decision quickly out of fear. But just the time to actually listen to herself and listen to what her heart is saying.
Yeah. I can just see where that would be so powerful. And like you said, it's not manipulation. It's kind of a, you know, to use a biblical term, an unveiling or a revealing of what's there, you know, kind of taking away all the noise of the fear to just, in a place where someone's caring and listening, allow you to reveal those options and reflect on that. It's powerful. Boy, it also seems like, I mean, just hearing you talk about all this, that I know that right now you're very, very busy being a mom and doing all kinds of things, but you've certainly been given a deposit of wisdom on how to talk to women about these issues that I'm sure will surface throughout your life. You know, there's such a, not everybody has that gift of that level of personal lived experience of walking through this with women, you know. And just hearing you talk, I immediately hear like, yeah, would I have known that would be the approach, or how would I approach a woman that came to my office to talk to me about this? You know, that's super helpful. I might send them to you, Kayla, if we're.
Yeah, I would love that.
I know you would.
I think there's a lot of, you know, whenever we talk about abortion and we hear that it's a life and death situation, you know, it is scary, and it feels like a huge responsibility, and we have to do something about it, and we have to put an end to this.
Yeah.
But there's no one thing we can do. Changing laws doesn't make abortion stop, doesn't make unplanned pregnancy stop. It's really up to these mothers and fathers to make choices for life for their children. And so Resources for Women's vision is to change the culture in our area and provide enough resources that makes abortion really unnecessary, that abortion would be unthinkable because there are so many options out there and because the stigma of unplanned pregnancy is gone. Now, obviously, there's a stigma there in the Christian community because we believe that pregnancy should happen in a marriage between a man and a woman. But we just have to figure out a way to balance that with not being shocked or surprised that it happened.
Oh, I think so, too. Yeah, there needs to be... I think sometimes we're afraid that if we're really gracious, people will just take advantage. But I don't really... I think that that's sometimes not the reality. Just like what you explained, there's on the one hand, there is the truth that you could present a woman with, you know, the biblical teaching that when a woman is pregnant, God himself is forming a human being who bears the image of God and all that. And that's true. But then there's also what is most, without denying the truth, what brings change to the heart? And I don't think, you know, stigma does anything to, you know, change people on some of these issues. I mean, maybe it drives it underground, but it doesn't, like, change what, you know, it does. What it does is what you said is makes it less likely the person's going to have caring people speaking into the situation. It's interesting you're talking about the laws because I was in a convenience store the other day and I noticed that on the cover of USA Today yesterday, it said the headline on well, not the main headline, but it was on the front page, abortion debate to drive election. And so what it's talking about is that in all these states, politicians and different action groups are already acting as if Roe has been overturned, by which they mean if it's not a federal law that grants the right to abortion, well, all that means is not that it's illegal throughout the country, but that every state will decide. And so they're, both sides are going to be amping up to push for governors and state house representatives and lawmakers. And so it's just going to push it down to state level. And maybe 50% of the states will add restrictions. But the point of it all is just to say, I'm not against legal action being right. I'd love to see Roe overturned. However, the issue is going to be changed, like you said, through changing a culture, changing hearts, and so much of it through the gospel. How did you first hear about and become convinced of the importance of the sanctity of human life?
Well, I grew up in church, and it was kind of the law of the land, so I didn't ever question it a whole lot growing up, and it also wasn't an issue that I was faced with a lot because I didn't have an unplanned pregnancy, and none of my friends had an unplanned pregnancy, so I did kind of see it as an other problem. If it happened within the church, it was probably, you know, it just wasn't somebody that I knew, so I was able to not really think about it much. And then, so I guess it was in college when I saw the Crisis Pregnancy Center, and I already had in my mind positive things about, you know, pro-life agendas, I guess. And then when I entered in to the ministry and stopped and watched what was going on around me is when my heart broke for women going through unplanned pregnancies. And when, and where I saw believers from all sorts of different churches in a community come together and be the hands and feet of Jesus to women who were scared and alone and isolated and hated by their families, that I got really passionate about it. And I was also forced to do some self-reflection and really delve into my theological viewpoint of the sanctity of human life and is abortion ever okay and that kind of stuff. It's a unique ministry because usually when you're doing evangelism, you're going out to people and you're going to where they are. They're not usually coming to you. And this ministry is unique in that people come to us. We advertise a little bit about who we are and what we do, but nobody's really paying attention until they get a positive pregnancy test and then say, oh, where do I need to go?
Right.
So they find their way to us, and they're asking us to speak into the scariest thing they've ever experienced in their life, the biggest decision that they'll ever make. Mm. And they're just asking us to speak into their lives.
Yeah.
They want us to tell them what to do. We won't tell them what to do because that is not our choice to make. But, you know, it's a really unique opportunity for the gospel.
Yeah.
So in addition to doing the practical stuff of providing pregnancy tests, ultrasounds, options counseling, we also start developing these relationships that last for a really long time. Once somebody chooses to carry to term, and you know, if their family's supportive, then they usually don't end up coming back. But if their family's not supportive, or they just really have a lot of unmet needs, they'll hang on and come in about once a week for parenting classes, for Bible studies, for one-on-one mentorships, to get diapers and wipes and baby clothes and formula and maternity clothes. And through that, we formed some really cool connections where women have come to know the Lord. They've gotten involved in churches that we can pass the baton of taking care of that family. So then they'll go to a church, and that church will throw a baby shower, or the church will provide meals when she has her baby, or, you know, somebody will be with her when she's giving birth because she doesn't have a partner. Her partner left because she chose to carry a term.
It's so much more than – it's just so interesting to me because sometimes when people think about Christians in this issue, they mainly think of, like, protest or marches. But there's so much more that you're describing that people don't see. That's just, like you said, people – I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, family members who go to church and then actually pressure young women to get an abortion because of the shame or the convenience or whatever.
Yeah.
But – You're talking about a different expression of the gospel that is not just to, you know, convince this girl not to do this thing and then, like, wipe our hands like Pilate and go on with our lives, but actually walking with them through that. That's really cool. Yeah.
It is. It's really an honor, and I think it's important that regardless of what happens legally, like you were saying, abortion is always has always been with us and always will be with us.
Right.
And if, regardless of what happens legally, pregnancy centers have such a vital role to play in our communities. And if you're interested in supporting Sanctity of Life Ministry and wondering how you can do it, a pregnancy center is such a... they fill such immediate needs. There's women today at multiple crisis pregnancy centers in our county trying to decide whether or not their baby should live.
Wow.
And, and it goes on every day, and it always will. It went on through COVID. It never stopped. So there's a need for people to... for people to be there, for there to be a building, for there to be people there to meet with women. I wanted to add, we're talking about, I think you had mentioned about people in church. It triggered something some of the most difficult meetings I've had with clients were girls who were very involved in church. So these are believers. They would still, even, you know, regardless of what sin was going on in their lives, they were still identifying as a believer and claimed Christ. And their parents were very involved in church. They were very involved in church, served in ministries, you know. And they had Sanctity of Life stuff plastered all over their Facebook, and then they found out that they're pregnant and are considering an abortion and just not telling anybody because of what would the other parents of my friends in the youth group think about me? What would my parents think about me? And or some of them, like you said, their parents were pressuring them to have the abortion even though they're pro-life, because what if their friends found out?
Yeah, I've heard
those are the most heartbreaking ones, because these women really did believe that they were killing their babies. They were staunch in that belief, and yet they're still going to do it because they have to. And so they're signing up to deal with all of that trauma of having the abortion and living with it and trying to live with themselves after that. And it's so scary because those are our children. These are our children and our churches that we're taking care of, and that don't feel like they could admit to having done something wrong, and they have to live with their life feeling like a murderer before they could tell their church what they did.
My goodness, what a burden. And, you know, I didn't want to contradict you earlier, Kayla, but you were talking about, like, when you were growing up in church, this never happened to anybody. It never happened to you. It didn't happen to anybody you knew, any of your friends. But, of course, the reality is you don't know that. There may have been women in your church or in your youth group or, you know, whatever college ministries you were involved in, and you never knew. Somebody else was playing your role in their life, maybe, or not, or, you know, you wish they had been. Well,
very true.
Yeah, this is super, just super provocative in a good way. I mean, it stirs up a lot of thinking about this. I think sometimes in this modern world and in this present season, it's just so easy to feel overwhelmed. Everybody can't champion every single cause, but as Christians, we need to keep clear about these things and be open and be praying and looking for the opportunities of where we can go, where we can go, support where we can't go, and be informed on such a variety of issues. But thank you so much for just taking time to talk with me today about this. I'm going to, after we get off the conversation, I'm going to add later on a little bit of a teaching, like I said earlier, on Psalm 139 and a couple of other thoughts. But I sure appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. Yep. I love to talk about it, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I really enjoyed listening to Kayla share some of her experiences and had some things just kind of come alive in a new way. Some things that I knew, but hearing her experiences and her perspective really brought to life. And then other things that I really didn't know that I found just very interesting. I wondered, though, as I was thinking about doing this podcast, whether there are some people who, maybe you're not a Christian, you listen sometimes because you know somebody who shared this with you, or maybe you are a Christian, but you just never really got it. Why are so many Christians so passionate about this issue of the sanctity of human life? Why are so many Christians so anti-abortion? Why has this historically been the position of the Christian faith? And I don't begin to think that I could do justice to all of that, but what I did want to do is look at a passage from Scripture that I know speaks to this issue, and I think it does so in a very beautiful, affirming way. It's Psalm 139. And Psalm 139 is not written for the purpose of addressing the issue of the sanctity of human life, but it speaks to the issue powerfully because the psalm takes you back to the time before you were born, and it tells you that God was personally, intimately, and actively involved in your life even then. And I think what we can say about the psalm is that in the revelation that comes through in Psalm 139, there are really two critical truths, two great truths about every unborn child, every baby in the womb. And the first is this: whenever a woman is pregnant, God himself is at work forming the child within her. Psalm 139 verse 13 through 14. And for this podcast, I'm using the New International Version, but listen to what it says. It says, "For you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, and I know that full well." So I love that that word wonderful is used repeatedly. Every human being is a wonderful work of God. And that's part of the sanctity of human life. That's something that we really never want to lose that perspective. And the polarization of the world, or even with respect to the unborn baby in the womb, coiled at the center of every cell in your body is a DNA molecule. Each DNA molecule carries within itself all the genetic information that makes you who you are. Scientists say that the information carried within each DNA molecule, if it were written out, it would fill 1,000 books of 600 pages each. A nerve cell may operate from volume 4, a kidney cell from volume 25, and yet each cell contains the whole library. So DNA is so narrow and compact that all the genes and all your cells could fit into an ice cube. And yet, if that DNA were unwound and joined end to end, the strand could stretch from the earth to the sun and back 400 times. I know that's just mind-boggling, right? But when you think about the complexity of your body, you can only look at God and say with the psalmist in verse 14, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Dr. C. Everett Koop, the once surgeon-in-chief at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, former Surgeon General of the United States, wrote in a magazine article some years ago, "If you believe the universe came about by chance and that you and I evolved from a primordial ooze, then there's no unique dignity to human life. Why worry about it? But if you believe that man, humankind, was created in the image of God and that he has total, unique, and specific specialness, then he should be protected to the best of our ability for all of his lifetime." And that's what's really at the heart of this issue of the sanctity of human life. It's a view of life that leads to some very practical conclusion. It affects the way we look at others. It means that every person, no matter who he is or who she is made in God's image and has unique value. And every human being is to be treated with dignity and respect. So Psalm 139 is saying every human being is a wonderful work of God. But it's actually even saying more than that. It's saying whenever a woman is pregnant, God is at work within her. Verse 13 says, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb." And so this is obviously a metaphor, but it's a metaphor of God at work. It doesn't contradict the fact that there's biological, sexual causes behind every birth. It's simply saying that in the midst of and through the means of those natural processes, God himself is at work forming a child. The Hebrew word translated "my inmost being" is literally the word for kidneys. When the Hebrews butchered animals, the kidneys were the last organs that they would get to. And so this term kind of took on a symbolic meaning of the innermost organs of the body and came to be used like we might use the word heart for the innermost aspects of the personality. What we're being told is that when a woman is pregnant, God is at work. He's actively at work. He's creating the inner organs in the innermost being. And like a craftsman, he knits me together in my mother's womb. That's what the psalmist says. Although couples may have accidents, quote, unquote, couples may, quote, make mistakes, God doesn't. Every conception is an occasion out of which God is forming a child. And the second great truth in the passage is that from its earliest point of development, that unborn child is a living person who's loved by God. So listen while I read verses 15 through 16. "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body." So God knows and sees the unborn child when nobody else does. In verse 13, David had said he was knit together in his mother's womb. Here he says he's woven together in the depths of the earth, and he calls it the secret place. So the way that Hebrew poetry works is that the clear statement about the mother's womb in verse 13 lets us know that when he talks about the depths of the earth, he's using a poetic license to compare the womb to a kind of secret place, a place of darkness, of silence, of solitude, of secrecy, but really also, ideally, a place of safety deep in the heart of this world. And he says, God knows and sees into that secret place. And he sees the child, even when no one else does. The psalm says, there in the secret place of my earthly origin, I was woven together. And that idea of being knit or woven together indicates the imagery of embroidery with its many colors. It seems as if he pictures the intricate weaving together of the inward organs and all their various colors, the veins, the arteries, the muscles, the reds, the pinks, the purples, the blues, the whites, all of the different hues of the body in its beauty. Verse 16 says, your eyes saw my unformed body at the earliest points of development, when the child is still not fully formed. The tiny embryo is an individual person and the object of God's love and concern. And in verse 15, David says, I was made in secret. In verse 13, he says, you knit me together in my mother's womb. He's saying that a living person comes into existence, not at birth or at some arbitrary point, some arbitrary number of weeks just before birth, but from the very beginning, from conception. That is all really a pretty stunning thing when you think about the statistics on abortion. I went on the Center for Disease Control, the CDC website, to get the official government statistics and saw that in 2019 there were 629,898 legally induced abortions that were reported to the CDC. That's a huge number, 629,898. So compare that to gun deaths, right? In 2019, there were 3,371 American children and teens killed with guns, whether intentionally or accidentally. Now, that's a lot. We're not minimizing that, 3,371. But compare that to 629,898. Or take the statistics for what is being reported on the CDC as COVID-related deaths of children 0 to 4 years old and 5 to 18. So from 0 to 4 years old, the CDC reports 266 deaths from COVID, and that's from that's in both years, 2020 and 2021. And then from the years 5 years old to 18 years old, 596. That's a total, a grand total of all the deaths of children from 0 to 18 over a 2-year period from COVID-related issues, 862. So if you look into the reasons for abortion, this it's just stunning because the vast majority, well over 90%, are due to personal choice, people feeling too young, not ready for the responsibility, shame, economic issues, to avoid having to adjust their life plans, interfering with education, or in a poor relationship, or having enough children already. In other words, these are all not small things, but they're not life-threatening. They're not even the really heart-wrenching situations of rape or incest or anything like that. They are some aspect of lifestyle and convenience. And so it's just kind of stunning. It used to be argued that no one knows when life begins, but even those who advocate for abortion now often are accepting the fact that abortion takes a life because they realize that they just can't deny it. Faye Waddleton was the longest reigning president of the largest abortion provider in the world, Planned Parenthood. Years ago, she was interviewed in Ms. Magazine. And in the interview, she says, I think we've deluded ourselves into believing that people don't know that abortion is killing. So any pretense that abortion is not killing is really a signal of our ambivalence, a signal that we cannot say, yes, it kills a fetus. Naomi Wolf, a prominent feminist author and abortion supporter, makes a similar concession. She writes, clinging to a rhetoric about abortion in which there is no life and no death, we entangle our beliefs in a series of self-delusions, fibs, and evasions. We need to contextualize the fight to defend abortion rights within a moral framework that admits that the death of a fetus is a real death. Now, it's hard to read these and not get kind of overwrought, at least for me, because when you look at the reasons that people are choosing to do it, you know that they're not things that you would take lightly if it was someone you loved who was going through the issue of wrestling with how this might change the whole trajectory of their life. But my goodness, if you put that in the scale and weigh it against the fact of the stark reality that you are taking the life of a person. David Boonen, in his book, A Defense of Abortion, makes this startling admission. He says, in the top drawer of my desk, I keep a picture of my son. This picture was taken on September 7th, 1993, 24 weeks before he was born. The sonogram image is murky, but it reveals clear enough a small head tilted back slightly, and an arm raised up and bent with the hand pointing back toward the face and the thumb extended out towards the mouth. There is no doubt in my mind that this picture, too, shows my son at a very early stage in his physical development. And there's no question that the position I defend in this book entails that it would have been morally permissible to end his life at this point. And we need to be compassionate towards women, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have Kayla on to get her perspective on how, you know, the one tremendous way that compassion is shown is through pregnancy centers. We need to be compassionate towards women with pregnancies they did not plan and maybe do not want. But if abortion is ending a life, we also have to conclude that the right to not be killed, the right of the child to not have its life taken, outweighs the right to not be pregnant. And Psalm 139 is really given to teach us just what is an incredibly positive and beautiful truth, that when a woman is pregnant, God himself is forming the child within her, and that child is a human being known and loved by God, and that life is sacred and worthy of love and protection. And verses 17 through 18 say, how precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. Those words are an oxymoron designed to make you reflect. The word precious suggests something very, very rare. And yet God's thoughts, although precious, are vast in number. There are more of them than there are grains of sand. I think we all should realize that we can make a difference in this world. God wants his children to stand for life and even to sacrifice in a culture that's increasingly becoming a culture of death and denial and disbelief and untruths and self-interest. Speaking to one person with compassion and clarity, or maybe even better, as Kayla told us in the interview, really, really listening and asking good questions can change a heart, it can save a life, it can begin a story that leads to a lot of good things. Serving at a women's resource center, using your vote, adopting a baby, all of those things are part of the the overall approach to honoring the sanctity of human life. And maybe for some of us, it just all has to begin with being informed. And I hope this has been a small step in that direction, and that it would spark your curiosity to dig deeper into this issue. And I want to say, if you've had an abortion, or if you've encouraged someone to have an abortion, or helped someone to abort a baby, or maybe even pressured someone to do so, understand this. Please understand this. The God who is worshipped in Psalm 139 for knitting you together in your mother's womb is not a distant God who's devoid of grace. In Jesus Christ, he himself came not just into our world, but into a womb where his body was knit together in the secret place so that he could offer himself as a sacrifice for our sins. He made himself vulnerable and gave his life to give us life. And we all have to turn to him to receive the saving grace that we all need. Grace is God's mercy offered freely to everyone who repents and receives Jesus as Savior by trusting in him. The sacrifice of Christ, it's so real and so costly. And the forgiveness of sins that he brings is absolute and free, but you have to receive it through faith in Christ. If you have received that gift of saving grace, then because of his love for you, you're called to love him, to trust him, and to love others for him. And to honor the sanctity of human life is just one of the many ways we honor the God who loves us, redeems us, and gives us life by his grace. Well, friends, I hope you enjoyed the podcast and were encouraged and maybe in some new ways stimulated and informed by it. If you like the podcast, we'd love it if you would give us a positive review and share the podcast with your friends. This is a topic which many people have questions about, and maybe it would be the start of an exploration that would take somebody deeper and help just really crystallize some sound convictions in a healthy way. If you have questions or comments for us, you can email us at this address, ccc@cccdaytona.org. Just put the word podcast in the subject line and we'll get your email and reply to you. Thanks again, and may God richly bless you.